Hey guys, on this episode, we're going to be talking about divorce-proofing your marriage, building relationships, and even building strong relationships while you are deployed, and also how to rebuild your relationship when you come back from deployment. So guys, just check this out. This is amazing. Love you guys.
Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Vertical Momentum. Today is going to be an amazing show. I have an amazing young lady coming on, and we're going to be talking about some stuff that I'm very interested in. So thank you so much for hopping on, Melissa. How are you today?
Hello, I'm good. Nice to see you.
Yeah, so what's new?
Oh man. Well, I live here in the Pacific Northwest and it has been sunny for the last 9 days. So us Pacific Northwesterners, we soak in that sun as much as possible, especially in the spring months when it's been such a long winter.
Now, where are you originally from?
I was born and raised in the Pacific Northwest.
So you're used to that kind of weather then?
I sure am. But does that mean that I enjoy it? Debatable. So I grew up on the Olympic Peninsula. So if you look at the state of Washington, you have that Olympic Peninsula off to the far west. And my dad was a firefighter and grew into administrative firework. And so we grew up with lots of rain and lots of outdoor time and lots of time with both parents because of shift work, right? So we grew very accustomed to it. But as I continued to get older and after I got married, we moved to Hawaii, which was an amazing opportunity, our first duty station after getting married. And I never really wanted to leave. But here we are. We're back in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm just dreaming that it's Hawaii when I look out the window, and it seems so warm and sunny, and it's actually like 65 degrees, but I'll take it.
One thing I noticed about the people from your area, a lot of them are laid back, and they appreciate life. They appreciate nature, you know, and I'm from up north, and, we're in the concrete jungle, and I'm actually sitting overlooking where the Twin Towers once stood. And it's amazing how, you know, like we take for granted what everything nature has to offer when people like from the Pacific Northwest, they actually take the time to actually enjoy it.
Yeah. You know, we are so fortunate to be in such a beautiful area. And it's, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking the other day about the fact that we this winter with COVID taking over our whole world, we were able to ski about every other weekend with our little girls. And it was such a breath of fresh air. Like, okay, so on the slopes, everything felt normal because, you know, skis and snowboards keep you about 6 feet apart anyway. And everyone's already wearing, you know, masks and those kinds of things. So it felt like this little opportunity to be in a world that felt really normal in the midst of hard.
Now, your father, you said, was a firefighter?
Yes, he was. In fact, he started in the firefighter world, I don't know, when he was 18 or 19 years old. And he's, you know, progressively become much more advanced in his leadership as the years go on. But he's going to be retiring next year after serving as chief in two departments, serving as deputy chief in two. And you can tell I'm very proud, but I'm biased.
You know, we got to love our, you know, our parents. And if you do get a chance to thank him for me, because I appreciate all of our first responders. And so, you know, how did you get into, because I'm very interested in the cognitive therapy. But what got you interested into going into that field and doing stuff like that?
Good question. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I really, growing up, so watching people, I would say that even as a kid, I've always been really interested in human behavior And you know why we see some people show up in really incredible ways and other people show up in different and equally incredible ways, and what creates growth and development as an adult, right? So after we grow and develop as typical children, there's this continuation of development when our brains have reached their max capacity of original development. Then we have all this opportunity with neuroplasticity to develop and grow and mature. And so when I started undergrad, the first thing that I did was, ask my dad, well, what would be the responsible thing to learn? Because I'm really interested in about a human behavior. And he said, well, why don't you check in with another part just in case? So I made a deal and I started learning about finance and also human behavior. So it was an interesting compilation together. But I met and married my husband, and we were young, straight out of college. He was graduating from West Point, and we were on our way to Hawaii. And I found that I had an internship with the Department of the Army, working with a program called the Risk Reduction Program. And so after I graduated in 2009, they hired me. And I learned in that process that I really loved understanding what creates health promotion and what creates healthy habits, and why there are some soldiers that, really enter into combat and they come out with this concept, this idea of post-traumatic growth, right? And we would see that. And then also, we would also experience post-traumatic stress. And so, understanding the difference between number one, post-traumatic stress disorder, and also post-traumatic growth, and how all of those things can really be combined. It kind of takes away the stigma from PTSD in understanding this is not who you are, this is something that you experienced. And I think a lot of cognitive work helps us recognize what we're looking at and what we're facing when it comes to trauma identification and how we can grow through it. That's why I was so excited to meet with you today after kind of hearing a little bit about your story. And I would say as well, with thank you for acknowledging my dad's service, and we would all say the same to you. Thank you so much for your service.
Oh, thank you. Well, I did a couple years, but you're like the third, fourth person. Like I talked to Professor Free last week, and you're like the third person that's talking about post-traumatic growth. Now, I found, I've talked to hundreds of people now on my show, and I mean, like, I'm not a professional at all. I only graduated ninth grade, so I have no professionalism. But I found that when an adult usually acts out, it's usually because of stuff that happened between the ages of 3 and 13. And then you add war to the mix, and then you add alcohol to the mix sometimes, not all the time.
Sure.
You have a perfect storm.
Yeah.
When you
Yeah.
get out of the military, or even, firefighters, first responders, firemen, when they retire, they don't live that long. And I think it's because of being in that perfect storm. And when you get out of that per or when you're in the perfect storm, you don't really have people to talk to, because you're, like, miss your, like, if you're a fireman, you miss the guys in your house. And like, I read a statistic today that, the average male in the United States lives to 78 years old, but the average first responder, whether that's veteran, firefighter, police officer, only lives to age 58. So that's a 20-year difference. And I think what you're talking about is, if we can find out how we can go with post-traumatic growth instead of being labeled with dysfunction. So,
Yeah.
talk to us
Yeah.
about the difference between post-traumatic growth and post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. It's really interesting walking together with a variety of different kinds of first responders. I'm grateful that you acknowledge and kind of did some research on the stress that they encounter, because I think one of the things that really reduces life expectancy is this huge amount of stress within trauma, right? So in those traumatic moments, especially for, you know, your in city and county first responders, they're experiencing trauma, secondary trauma, on the daily, right? And so really managing and regulating some of those stressful events takes time and emotional depth. So what we see when we encounter, you know, a traumatic event is we see very typical behaviors in post-traumatic stress. So you might experience some dreams, you might experience some anxiety, you might experience elevated stress and cortisol that are taking place in your body, some irritability, and those things are really normal, especially after encountering a pretty significant event. And what we want to be really aware of is when those symptoms continue to last beyond, you know, a series of a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, right? When we're still encountering difficult dreams and we're still encountering, you know, kind of a awakening or lurching with any kind of trigger points or noises, those kinds of things. That indicates that somehow that trauma has really affected our brain in a way that needs some treatment, right? And when we look at post-traumatic growth, it often is twofold. So one part is, and this is kind of a prevention idea, is going into trauma, right? So we talk with, you know, special forces individuals who talk about when they're heading out to their mission, right? There's this cognitive element of planning forward for worst case scenario. So for example, when I look at my buddy and I see him get shot, what am I going to do? How can I complete the mission? How can I move my cognitive space? So planning forward for those types of events and recognizing what am I going to do to move through that, complete the mission, and then come home and process.
Okay.
The other part, yeah.
I'm sorry. Because I have a traumatic brain injury and I have ADD. So sometimes I have shiny object syndrome.
Yes.
So sometimes I don't know where my conversations go, but it's okay.
I love it.
You know, now I know that, you know, is your husband still in the military?
No. So he exited in 2014.
Okay. So, you know, let me ask you now it's not the professional side, it's the personal side, because one thing that I have a big place in my heart for is, you know, when a soldier, whether it's a female or a male, gets deployed, their family also gets deployed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the mother or the father that's home has to take up the mantle and has to be the mother and the father. So I just want to give you want to thank you. And I want to thank all the people out there that are husbands and wives of military service, because you guys are doing the same amount of time as we are. So what is it like? Was it like being a spouse of a military member and knowing what you know is different? You know, somebody, you can know what you know in your office, but when it comes to your own house, when it comes to your own kitchen table, it's a different story.
So I'm glad. Yeah, absolutely.
So what,
Richard, that's why we have our own therapists.
Yeah, I get it.
because you're absolutely right. It's different when, you know, we're able to process and kind of be outside of the box and really work through some of these concepts. And then it's different when it's our own. So for example, when my husband deployed, he had his deployment schedule planned. We had an excellent group. Our battalion commander and his wife were incredible life changers for both me and my husband. And I found out that we were expecting baby number one, and that this little girl was going to be born sometime while he was in Iraq, which actually happens very often. You know, just babies are born when they're born. But interestingly, there was some research that came out the year after I gave birth to our first girl that indicated that spouses of deployed members often, number one, have preterm births and have a 60% higher rate of post-birth depression, Right. And that really was something that took place for me. So, I think there's a healthy fear that takes place in, recognizing that our loved ones are away. And then there's also the daily grind of waking up with baby and giving birth alone and, wondering what's going on the other side of the world with the person that I love. So it's complicated.
And I think that's why we have, I'm having you on to have these talks, because a lot of this stuff doesn't get talked about. We never really hear, like, because I have a friend, his name is Charles Strange, and he lost his son. He's a Gold Star family member. And a lot of times you don't hear about the family and the family afterward. We just hear about the veterans. So that's why I thank you for coming on today. Now, this, like you said, this might get personal, but they do call me the veteran Oprah. So if I don't ask the question, it's when you came, when he when your husband came, and thank your husband for me. I love my
Oh,
friends and thank him for from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, thank
thank you.
you. Did you notice something was off, or did he come back okay? No issues.
Yeah, there's a couple things. When you have years apart from a spouse, it doesn't matter the if you have the best internet connectivity or the most amazing apps, there's still innately a disconnect, right? And one thing that I noticed about my husband wasn't that he seemed like he had intense trauma, but the fact that our relationship was extremely disconnected to the point where, when he came back, I just want, we talk about all these plans for reintegration and developing, the family together again. And I really found myself wondering, like, okay, when's that going to happen? Like, everybody talks about the honeymoon period and then, things get a little difficult and then, you come back together and things are really good. And for us, Jonathan came back and he was just disconnected. And it was scary, I think, for me, and wondering, what does our relationship look like moving forward? Does this man love me? Are we, we just had a baby. Is there something wrong with me? After this is our first baby, what happened? And really, over the next several months and times, I think that was the most turmoil that we have ever experienced in our relationship. To be, really honest, we went through a relationship separation during that time. I moved out of the state. He was in Oklahoma at the time, and I went home to be with family because it's so emotionally exhausting and devastating when you feel unloved and unseen. And he was never cruel or mean. He was just not there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can totally. I can, because a lot of people that I've talked to, when you're over there, you have a mission, and then a lot of times, we know what the mission is. It's black and white, and then a lot of times when you get home, the stuff that would normally aggravate the average person, we really don't care about, like my wife, because my wife is my bride, she's my everything, she's my rock. But she has road rage, and we're driving, and I'm like, honey, as long as nobody's shooting at us or we're not getting IEDs going off around us, we're okay. So a lot of times we have, when like when a person goes off to war, they don't come back the same person that they were. And a lot of times you have to, it's hard learning how to reintegrate yourself. Like, especially like, I was talking to a guy named, he has a podcast called The Military Veterans Dads. It's a great podcast. And he talks about, like a lot of times when we get deployed, and the mom or the husband, whatever it is, they're taking the place of the mother, the father, paying all the bills. And then when we get back home, we don't know where to fit in, and we rush to try to fit in and change and go back to the way we were. and it's not that way anymore. And I think sometimes, like, you know, like my friend Ben said, sometimes we just have to take a step back and slowly mm-hmm. reintegrate back into the mm-hmm. family. So what are your thoughts yeah. on stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think the slow integration is important. Also, therapy. There are key interventions that can be done. We call them interventions. That's such a clinical term. But there are strategies that we use to help develop connectivity, right? So, you know, I think that, you know, Jonathan, he didn't really know how to connect with me or how to see me or how to develop what we would call a love map, right? Understanding each other's inner worlds. And so without these tools, there's really no way to move in. He wanted to love me and I wanted to love him. But there was really no way to develop that connection. And so we started seeing an incredible marriage and family therapist actually through the VA. And this woman, you know, she really helped use some excellent firm data points that really speak to the engineer mind. My husband's an engineer. I love engineers. And, you know, I think when you look at, okay, well, science proves that using these specific tactics will increase emotional connection. That spoke to both of us because we both are really interested in what science shows is proven for developing relationships.
I used to hate engineers because I used to sell timeshares, and trying to sell a timeshare to an engineer is like trying to sell ice to an Eskimo because they're so analytical, you know, and they are down to the nth. So now this is something I want to talk about because I have somebody very, very close to me, somebody that I love very dearly, going through marriage counseling with the Gottman theory. So, mm-hmm. and that's why one of the things when I seen it, I was like, oh, this is great. I got to talk about mm-hmm. it. I've heard a lot of amazing things about this. Mm-hmm. So can you please talk a little bit about what this is about?
Oh, yeah. Richard, I'm so passionate about Gottman method. I could talk about Gottman theory all day long, but I will say my husband and I, you know, are both really well-versed in Gottman work. In fact, we're putting on 2 workshops next month together. I'm really fortunate because, you know, working together with Jonathan, he is the only spouse of a therapist that I have met to date that is willing and passionate and excited to put on workshops to develop relationships. So I got really lucky with him. But yeah, the cool part is the Gottmans took some time to really understand that there was a disconnect between therapy and couple work. And what they were noticing is that when a couple would go in for counseling, there would be about a 50% relapse rate, which would basically mean there's no proven data to show that therapy was effective, like standard therapy. And so they started taking some time to research what makes relationships work. And over 40 years, they've studied thousands and thousands and thousands of couples in all of their case studies in different age groups, demographics, all of those things in the Love Lab out of the University of Washington in Seattle. And what they found is that really relationships come back to a few solid points of data. One thing is small things often. When we think about relationships and we look online and we see the Instagram posts and the Facebook posts, we see these romantic vacations and fancy homes and new cars. And we often think, wow, that family must be so happy. But it's actually not true. Often, the families that are showing you know, signs of being able to have all these happy experiences may not have the connectivity that other families have that aren't doing those big extravagant things. It comes down to the little things. So for example, one of the things that that my husband has noticed about me is that I love like having a little part of my body touching his. So for example, when I sit down, I'll like put my foot on top of his foot, which is makes some people think, oh, what is that? But it's just my way to say, I like you and you're close to me. Those small little things that are just something between you and your partner tell you, hey, we have something here, and only we know about it. And it's fun and it's unique and it's us. Also, my husband, he chooses to call and text periodically throughout the day. Say, how's your day going? What's going on? And to me, that's him checking in and showing interest and being aware. And so really those small little tidbits of things often, all the time, help us develop a rich connection opportunity because science shows for every five positive interactions that we have, it is neutralized by one negative interaction. So the masters of relationship have a ratio of about 25 positive interactions together with their partner to every one negative interaction. And that really promotes this really healthy, happy experience. Also,
Ahead, I'm sorry.
yeah, no, go ahead.
And like for me and my wife, I love my, like I said, she's my bride. I've known her for 30 years and she'll always be my bride.
Love it.
There's a book out there called The Love Dare. I've probably done The Love Dare 15 or 20 times. And I think a lot of people, like I got the pleasure of having lunch one day with Pastor T.D. Jakes, and told me, said, if you don't hit your wife, another man will. And a lot of people forget to treat, in my opinion, forget to treat their significant other like they did when they were boyfriend and girlfriend. They kind of, life gets in the way, kids get in the way, and but sometimes we have to sit back and realize, wow, this person, God willing, is going to be with me for the rest of my life. This is, these are the, it doesn't matter how many followers you got on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever. But, when your day comes, these are going to be people that are going to be surrounding you. So,
Absolutely. It's interesting too, because you're absolutely right that on when we're talking to people at end of life, no one at the end of their life says, I wish I would have had that last connection with building my business before I retired. They always say, I wish I would have had more time with my family. I wish I would have invested in my marriage. And what's even more interesting is it's I was listening to a podcaster recently on the biggest decisions that you can make to promote wealth in your lifetime. And one of the most incredible insights and the most impactful is to invest in your marriage early. Because investing in your marriage early creates rich connection and avoids things like disconnection, separation, divorce, separation of assets, those kinds of things. And so when we really put a lot of effort in our relationship early on, it just continues to snowball. It builds and builds over time. That's why relationships innately often get better and better year over year, is because the knowing of each other gets richer and more deep.
well, but then also, because I'm the kind of guy that I would be the worst person to ever have on a jury, because I always look at both sides and I could switch both sides back and forth and feel like, yeah, I get that. But he's guilty. No, he's innocent. Guilty, innocent. But a lot of times it's kind of like when you buy that new car. Everybody loves their new car until it's about 6 months old, and then it's no longer new. And one thing I came to realization, like I had my own, I threw my own mental health summit April 3rd called Today I Decide. And I'm getting everything ready for it. And my wife almost had like a nervous breakdown because of stuff that's going on with work and stuff. And she said, you're worried about everybody else, but you're not worried about me losing my mind. And it made me sit back and start thinking, a lot of people were so worried about helping everybody else, but we don't worry about the person that's sitting across the kitchen table from us.
Yeah, I mean, and especially I think that some of us are uniquely wired in that way. So, for example, in my relationship, my husband is his main concern, his primary concern, and about the only people that he truly is in tune with and cares well for is me and our two daughters. Now, for me, I see everyone and I want to help everyone. And I'm so excited about just developing new ways to think and develop and grow. And And sometimes I can forget that I'm looking across at this man that I've been married to now on 13 years, and he missed me. So sometimes it's all about the regrouping, right? That aha moment. We had it too in the pandemic. I'll never forget. Probably, I don't know, October, my caseload was growing. You know, everything is just kind of exploding in this point. And I come home from work and Jonathan's looking at me across the dinner table and he says, "I miss you." And I'm like, "I'm here. What are you talking about?" And he said, "You're here, but your brain is not." And it was a good time for me to recognize, ah, I need to separate myself from work, from deadlines, calendar invites, and really regroup together with him. He's the one that matters to me.
And I totally love that, you know. And then when you send me your bio, because I love studying people, and since we, you know, I've read everything, that all the papers that you've written and everything, and just because I like to get to know a person beforehand, I said, I guess that's what makes me different than other podcasters.
Yes,
you know, I
believe, you're a good researcher.
Well, I believe that, you know, like now that we've talked, that, you know, the relationship just starts today, and I'm a relationship kind of guy. And I believe in, like you talk about, interpersonal relationships. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they, in the age that we live in, they forgot how to build relationships, especially mm-hmm. in business. Now, we're going to talk about LinkedIn for a second. Mm-hmm. I can't count how many times I'll get a connection request and I'll look through their profile and I'll accept it. And bam, not even 30 seconds later, I get a canned pitch. Mm-hmm. And I actually reply back to him, "Yes, I'm doing well. My family's doing well. Thank you." And you never hear from him again.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us about building relationships, not only in business, but in all areas of your life, because I believe that relationships is the most important thing in the world. So what are your thoughts on relationships?
Richard, you and I agree. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, it's interesting because I too have had the same experience on LinkedIn and also in other platforms. You know, you haven't heard from this high school friend and you know, for decades, and then all of a sudden, there you are, and they're contacting you and they want to sell you something, and it's frustrating because you wonder, at what point is the human being important beyond just what can we do for you, you know? And I think all of this relationship work is really important in intimate partner relationships, relationships with our children, relationships with colleagues, and also when we're trying to build a network, you know? So building our network is more about developing an understanding of who someone is and really displaying an idea that we're interested in the person, so who you are, over what you do. And I think that applies in so many different areas.
Okay, then I have another question, because I've realized in my life now, as I get older, you know, I became an old man now, that I can't make somebody else happy, and they can't make me happy. But we can make each other happy in a way, but we both have to be healthy. And, you know, and I think a lot of people, they get lost in that thinking, you know, I'm the savior of somebody else. And meanwhile, knowing that you can never save somebody else, and you can, right. like our family, we're going through some stuff right now. And, you know, the only thing that I can do there is stand beside my wife. I may not be able to do anything, but, you know, she knows that I'm there for her. So mm-hmm. you know, talk to us a little about, because I'm a big, I've been in recovery 32 years now. And mm-hmm. one of the first books somebody threw at me was Melody Beattie's Codependent.
Yes. Codependent No More.
And that helped me out a lot. And yeah. you know, so talk to us a little bit about, you know, being in a relationship, but being interdependent also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the phrase interdependent, because you're right. There can be dependency, and then there can also be codependency. So dependency is this innate need for someone to care for you, And codependency, it comes into play often when there is some kind of substance use. But we show up and we rescue and we try to make things right and we don't want to see that person fail. And it's because, we love them. We want to see the best in them. But the problem lies in the fact that as we continue to try to help in that way and save them from destruction, we're preventing them from healing. Right. And so interdependency is this beautiful woven tapestry where we're able to have expectations, to hold accountability, and to maintain our own integrity within the relationship. And so both parties are doing their part, showing up, are equally invested, not only in the relationship, but everything that we are working toward. And we're willing to say hard things to get to our goal. We're also willing to be there for that person as they're wrestling through difficult things, like you standing next to your wife and saying, I don't know what to say or what to do, but I am here with you in this, and I'm here to be a listener. Those key factors create this beautiful opportunity for interdependency. And this is also a key factor in business and organizational relationships. Right. So if we're on a team where everyone is, innately individual, or we're trying to help someone out because they're struggling, there's a point where we have to recognize where do boundaries need set? When do we need to set up accountability? And when do we need to move forward for the better of the team? Right. And it applies on all levels in relationships. I think you're 100% right.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about business because I'm sure you talk to a lot of businesses, and a lot of times, I talk to a lot of veterans, and when they get out of the military, they want to open up a t-shirt company, a hat company, liquor, coffee, but they don't have that hard conversation sitting across the kitchen table until the proverbial shit hits the fan. And then you have to go back and have an even harder conversation with your significant other. So, talk to us about business and how to build healthy relationships in business.
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. One is, talking to your partner, right? So when you're working with, for example, in a startup, which actually my husband and I were involved with a startup a couple years ago. Anyway, startups have a really high failure rate, right? So when you're entering into something that is high risk, it's important to talk about the hard things ahead of time, right? This could fail. What are we going to do? It's the same mentality when you're looking at trauma. How do we plan effectively for the worst case scenario? Also, how do we plan effectively for the best case scenario? But I think, with relationships in general, communication is so important, and knowing that you're on each other's team. Now, when you're working on an organizational level with teammates and projects and deadlines and all these things, the same holds true. And really, what needs to be developed is this foundation of trust. Now, trust is tricky because we don't just get it, right? When we start at a firm or start in a job, we aren't automatically just handed trust. It has to be built over time. So what builds trust over time? And really, it comes down to that same concept that we talked about earlier, is small things often. So number one, when we're building trust, we want to make sure on our teams that our teammates know we're on their team, right? We're here working together with them. We see the best in them. So we have a positive viewpoint. We see all the things that they are, and we don't sit and resonate with all the things that a teammate is not. And we're looking for resolution, right? So when conflict comes up, which in all healthy relationships it does, we want to enter in and hold a hard conversation to be direct with that person. Often when we have difficulty, we tend to kind of sit with it for a while, and we might not approach the person that caused difficulty for us or that showed up in a meeting in a way that felt disruptive. And we might talk to someone else about it. Did you notice the way that that came off? Did you feel like it was difficult or not received well? And when, the really important thing is to show up and talk directly with that person and really create conflict resolution by saying, hey, when you talk to me in that tone at our board meeting, it really made me feel dismissed. And I'd really like to ask for something different next time. Or really developing the ability to identify emotions underneath what we're experiencing. So I've been working with some really incredible teams, and what we're seeing at these team tables is the development of psychological safety, where if someone is sitting at a table and everyone's talking about their project and all the parts and pieces that potentially are going wrong, that individual could say, hey, I'm recognizing some defensiveness. I'm going to take five to kind of regroup. I'll be back. And it's beautiful, right, to be able to, and the table's like, ah, no problem. Yep, let's reconvene. Because there's an opportunity, instead of at a board meeting, people shutting down and reducing the opportunity for creativity or innovation and effectiveness, we're able to, number one, create space for emotion and to really be able to dive into how does this affect our ability to work well together and our ability to be effective and engaged in the workplace.
I love that. So, last two questions I ask everybody. How do we get in touch with you? How do we find you? How can we get, if somebody's looking for coaching or just looking to sit down and talk with you and get help, how do we find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn, Melissa Parnell. I work with an incredible organizational firm called Ensight Partners, EN Sight, like vision partners. You can find us on our website. I have many incredible teammates, and my email address. You can find me at melissa@insightpartners.com.
I love that, and I'm going to send everybody your way, by the way.
I appreciate it.
Now, last question is, we live in a crazy world right now. We're in, right in the middle of COVID, and we have grandparents that are teaching kids, homeschooling kids, parents working two jobs just to try to put food on the table. So if I ask the average person to do something in 7 days, they're going to do it. But if I ask somebody to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're likely to do it. So, if somebody out there is struggling in relationships, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to get help?
I would say this is the most uncomfortable place, and also the best place is to enter into conversation with that relationship and ask that person, how do you experience me? Because I want to grow.
I love that. Well, guys, I want to thank you so much. Thank you for coming on. Guys, if you got anything out of this interview, please leave a comment for because she did an amazing job and I'm so grateful. So thank you. Have an amazing week and have a beautiful weekend.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard.
And God bless you and thank you for everything you're doing for our soldiers and our first responders.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.